What does leadership look like when you're providing the energy to power an economy, to power a community? Delivering safe, reliable power and cutting the path as a local leader in community service and volunteerism and the development of renewable sources of energy? What does that leadership look like? We're welcoming an individual today to our show that is an accomplished, dynamic leader that is successfully leading a profitable, sustainable, resilient energy utility, and it's a big one. Hey, everybody, I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and this is Impact Earth Energy. And you can always tell all of you regular listeners when I'm excited, and I'm pretty excited to have as our guest today, once again, Dave Hutchins, who is the president and CEO of UNS Energy Corporation. And I'm excited for a lot of reasons, one of which is going to be a really different kind of interview. I would call it a sharing wisdom show, kind of like Tuesdays with Maury, only Wednesdays with Gina. And how I feel is always stated pretty honestly. I do think Dave is an accomplished, dynamic leader that is successfully leading a profitable, sustainable, resilient utility in the midst of rapid change in the energy world and a great deal of pressure from consumers and regulators to move the renewable energy needle forward and to do it as quickly as possible. On top of that, he has to lead a company with thousands of employees and set the tone for the kind of culture he wants his employees to build with the thousand of customers they interact with on any given day. From where I sit, there seems to be a shortage of great leaders these days, especially if you're getting your information from any national news network, which I have opted out of. So our team decided to go against that trend and spend some time with a leader we have a great deal of respect for to simply talk about leadership. It's actually good news. Imagine that. So Mr. Hutchins, are you ready for an entirely different kind of show?
I am. Now I'm as excited as you are.
I know. Let's do it. So the perfect place to start is, what are some of the things that you value in a leader? What's important to you? Because I'm sure you have people in your world that you're looking to them for direction or for the qualities that you see in them. What does that look like to you?
You know, I've actually thought about this a lot, and I was on a panel last week or maybe a couple weeks ago, and someone asked a similar question to that. And I blurted out an answer that I really liked, which doesn't necessarily often happen when you're caught with a cold question.
Yeah.
But I think probably the most important thing I look for in leaders in our organization is that they're people. There's a lot of other attributes that you need from a business perspective, et cetera. But at the end of the day, in today's environment, we have to have people who are collaborative and who work well with other people. I think that's getting to be a lost art as we get a little bit more focused on doing things and getting things done instead of understanding how you're getting your employees engaged and how you're driving them successfully to executing the strategy. There's absolutely nothing more important to me, and I think most leaders would agree with this, is making sure that you have the best employees that you can get and that they're engaged and aligned at the highest levels across the entire organization. I mean, there's other things that you look at from a leader perspective, things, you know, when you get up higher in the organization that you want to make sure people have, like vision, making sure that they have ideals and as well as ideas to not just move your organization forward, but to have a positive impact on your community and the world in general.
You know, I did not know what you were going to say. And of course, I love that answer. And I have so many relationships with people on the TEP team. And I would say that's going quite well because a lot of them really are people person. And the other thing is about like kind of the deeper cut on that. I remember a really long time ago when I read this thing about like teachers teach and dictators tell. And the only thing that true leaders do is inspire. So, and that's something that you can't say, oh, I'm going to go out and inspire the troops today, because that's fake. But isn't inspiration, it's like kind of showing up as you and doing what you do, and then others want to lead. Isn't there a part of it that's real to that?
Absolutely. Inspiring people who work with you is truly the key to a great leader. And that's difficult to do in any other position than from the front. It's the standard kind of things, and I don't want to sound too elementary, but I mean, it is things like leading by example.
Yes.
It's, you know, treating people like you would like to be treated. It's setting the example across the board on acceptable behavior, integrity. All of those things are so darn important. And at the end of the day, and, you know, we've been doing a lot of, you know, just soul searching as a company, like we always do, to try to figure out how we can make this a better place, how we can get our employees more engaged. And, you know, there's a lot of data and research that talks about how people remember their work, why they like working where they work, has very little to do with the task and almost all to do with the people that they spend the time with. I mean, you don't remember, you know, project X, Y, and Z 20 years from now, but you still will remember those people and how it felt to work with them.
The experience. That's what you remember. I totally agree. I don't know what date that was on. I don't know exactly who was there, but I remember who I felt good about and who I wanted to spend time with. And, you know, the other part of this is I didn't want it to sound like, remember the, you probably don't because you're so much younger than I am, but the old Saturday Night Live where the swinging bachelors that would say, we're here to pump you up. And I didn't want to be,
mixing it up.
It's
that,
like,
that was Hans and Franz, swinging bachelors.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Hans and Franz.
Yeah.
So
I'm older than you think.
Hans and Franz. So that's what they said. Yeah. But this question is very sincere. And I spent a lot of time putting a lot of thought into these questions, knowing what the 10-year relationship with TEP has been like for us. So let's be honest. You have a strong leadership position here in our community, but you also have a national and international presence in the energy sector. And people just have to read about what's going on in the energy sector and how TEP is unique in that you source it and you deliver energy. So it's kind of a complex carbohydrate, as I would say. And you're trying to move more rapidly every day to more renewables for many reasons. There's lots of pressure from every corner of the world. You still have the reality of the balance sheet and earnings per share. But do you think what you do and how TEP stands out as a company where people want to work and when they stay and where you're creating collaborative partnerships, what are thoughts you'd be willing to share on how your ability to influence them is when it comes to what I call the reality of the climate crisis? And you know how I feel. I never hide that. I mean, we're in a climate crisis, and let's hurry up, folks. What path do you think you've been able to take that is an example for other utility companies?
Well, I think, you know, there's a lot of people talking, and a lot of people talk about numbers and dates and percentages and that kind of thing. And that's all well and good, because I think people have to have, you know, aspirational goals. They have to make sure that they have a vision of where they want to get to. But at the end of the day, it's whether or not you're doing. Are you actually doing what you say you should be doing? And in our case, you know, our state really doesn't have a really aggressive renewable portfolio standard requirements. And we saw this when I took the helm here at TEP, oh geez, 5.5 years ago or so, right after that. And somewhat before that as well, we started looking at our portfolio and saying, how can we be a little bit more aggressive in getting more clean energy into our portfolio? And at the time, and this was now, you know, again, 3 or 4 years ago, by the time we got and announced what we were going to do, we said, well, you know, our requirement's only 15% renewable energy. We think we can do twice that, 30% renewable energy by 2030, which also made for a catchy a slogan of 30 by 30. And we did that based on the input inside, you know, our four walls,
right?
To a large extent, but also knowing and understanding our community was looking for us to be a leader in this area, not just, you know, nothing feels good about just doing what you're told. to be honest, right? I mean, it's like, well, what are you doing? Well, we're doing what we're told. We're doing what we have
to. We're checking things off the list. Yeah,
that's not leading. That's managing, right? That's just doing, you know, trying to get something done that you've been told to do. And we thought that we could do better than that. And, you know, as it turns out, and every time we look at it, and we basically have one philosophy as far as, you know, greenhouse gas reductions or renewable energy. And that's, you know, can we do it as fast as we possibly can in a way that's cost effective for our customers and doesn't reduce our reliability on our system. And so with those principles, when we see opportunities, we step on the gas pedal. We saw a great opportunity earlier this year for a big wind project as some of these tax benefits were dropping off. And we said, great time to step on the gas pedal. So in essence, it turned that 30 by 30 goal into 30 by 21. And we will be right at the edge of 30% just a year and a half from now. And that's just us continually thinking about what we can do next. And, you know, obviously that takes a lot of planning. That you want to make sure that you're doing it in a way, like I said, that doesn't reduce reliability. So we had other things to do related to, you know, some new gas-fired generation, which would allow us to integrate more renewables, shut down some older gas generation, and allow us to increase that renewable energy in our portfolio. And I think the other thing that we have done recently, again, this is very recently, that this year, is when we put together our integrated resource plan, we said, we're not doing this in isolation. We want to make sure that we have everybody that we can in our community, our customers, the city and local, you know, county governments, low-income advocates, senior advocates, environmental groups, which generally, you know, people are not necessarily willing to open up the doors as wide as we have opened them. But we want to make sure that at the end of the day, everybody understands what you said is the complex carbohydrate, the complicated system that we run, and that you just can't, you know, run headlong into goals that you don't plan out. And we have planned out what we're doing very well, and we're going to integrate all these renewables. We got 450 megawatts of new renewables coming on next year, which will put us over 1,000 megawatts on our system. And we can do that because we've been planning to do it. But if you don't plan, you can't get there. So we're really excited about that process, because I've heard from everybody in that room, you know, from people who say we should be 100% renewables by yesterday to some who say, well, just don't do anything that raises my bill one penny. But at the end of the day, when you get everybody in that room, you can get a large amount of consensus about where we should be going. And you can shift. And this is big, Gina, because I think we kind of talked about this before on another call, that it's not really about the percentage of renewable energy. I know that's an easy way to kind of look at a goal. It's how much greenhouse gas reduction are you creating, or how much are you using those greenhouse gases? And that's what we've shifted in this integrated resource planning process. It's, remember what the goal is. The goal is not to have more X, Y, or Z, is to have lower greenhouse gas emissions. So let's focus on that as a goal and see where we're going to go from that perspective. You bring in, you know, we're using the U of A Institute of the Environment to help us develop the science-based goals from the experts in climate change and saying, what should we be doing? Those folks are all part of that stakeholder group. To me, that shows that we are looking forward and that we are trying to lead in this arena.
And it's kind of like beginning with the end in mind, and it, you alluded to it, but there's a lot of stakeholders on different sides of the fence that you have to curate or satisfy or whatever. And I had Ray Martinez on the show a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about the Corporation Commission and the mandate for infrastructure for electric vehicles. And yeah. I said, Ray, how are we going to get there from here to there? And when people, you know, say to me, you know, you're just supporting TEP because they're a sponsor. And I don't take that at all. I mean, it doesn't bother me. I'm like, you know, you're full of it. I've dug a little deeper. What would it take to do X, Y, and Z? And it's easier to, it's always easy to sit on the sideline and throw stones at the building when you don't know what's going on there. So I don't ever worry about that. But this is, Dave, this is such a very funny story that I want to share with you. So it's off the reservation, so to speak. But, okay. We have a little bit of land as James's family outside of Deming, New Mexico. So I had Ray on the show. He was talking about, you know, all hands on deck for creating that infrastructure. Because I said, you know, Ray, people are going to want to know how they're going to get from Tucson to Phoenix. There's so much fear that you're going to have to overcome. So my sister-in-law called and said that there are people interested in buying the land, and we were cracking up. It is like the land is, you've driven between Hatch and I-25. It's nothing. It's like creosote bushes, flat, the wind always blows. And who's buying that land is Shell Oil Company. And what mm-hmm. they told my sister-in-law is that they are buying every bit of available land in New Mexico and Arizona, and I think she said Nevada, for solar. So, and I said, it was like to me, bingo, Ray, that's what's going to happen. Shell Oil Company and the other oil companies who have a lot of money, they know where the direction is going. So that made me feel happy. It's like, yeah, we're going to have big money come in and help support the infrastructure because everybody's going to be driving electric vehicles before we know it. So I just thought I got to share that story with Dave because Shell Oil is in the game.
Oh, I think, yeah, you're right. And we look at this, we obviously watch this quite closely because we are, at the end of the day, are the ones who have to provide the electricity to charge those cars.
Exactly.
But Shell, BP, all of them are really focused on electric vehicles. Obviously, the vehicle manufacturers are focused on them as well. And you will get to the point where electric vehicles are everywhere. It's a slow ramp up, but when you drive one, I do drive. Just a little plug for electric vehicles. I do drive one now, and just love it. And you really forget it's an electric vehicle. They're like, you know, cars we're used to. You just plug them in instead of putting gas in them. And it to me, when people start experiencing how well made those cars are and how the new ones are coming out, and there'll be classes, there's pickup trucks coming, there's everything. And then they look at the infrastructure. I mean, we already pretty much have enough infrastructure other than chargers locally, because most people will charge at home and or
right.
work. Not a lot within the community. But you're right, you got to have those charging stations along the freeway, to get from here up to Phoenix and back. I think the range also will allow you to do that anyway. But, you know, we're really, I think, just on the edge of electric vehicles just taking off like crazy. And that gets us excited. And the reason it gets us excited mostly is, again, the story around the greenhouse gas reductions that you can get by turning from diesel and gasoline to electricity as a fuel source. Because as we were just talking, you can put a lot of renewable energy into the electricity mix. You can't put a lot of renewable energy into a gas tank. So when you look at the electric industry across the U.S., we are not the largest emitter of greenhouse gases, the transportation sector.
Right, right.
And we that's because over the last decade, we have really increased the amount of renewables, reduced the amount of coal, et cetera, in our portfolio as a nation that now it's below that. And so now we can turn around and say, well, we can do that same thing for transportation. And you have to look at it as an economy-wide goal, right? I mean, we can have goals, and we will have goals that are very specific to us and our fleet of generators and renewables, et cetera, that will supply the energy. But at the end of the day, we have to look at it from a community. So looking at electric transportation, to me, is extremely exciting. Did you see the electric buses announcement about 2 weeks ago? Maybe that was just last week.
Yes.
Here in the city of Tucson.
Yes. It's huge. It's huge.
It's huge. And, you know, it was great for us to be able to partner with SunTran and the city of Tucson and FEMA Association of Governments and others to make that a reality by helping fund the infrastructure that they're going to need to charge those at the station. But that's where you got to start. When you think of where can you make a big kind of bang for your buck, it's in the fleets. It's in the return to base kind of things like school buses and city buses, you know, UPS, FedEx, Amazon. All those fleets are going to be electrified in the next 10 years. I'm confident of that. So we have to make sure that we're ready for that.
And when I talk to like Neb Yonis, who's the GM for the 7 Chapman dealerships here, and I say, Neb, what happened when you went to Germany and what happened when you went here? He said, Gina, there's one word, electric. Everybody, BMW, Honda, all of them, VW, that's the future. It's electric. And then I sit there and think, how are we going to make it happen? And I'll tell you what, I've had a hybrid because Chapman, you know, provides a car for me. And when you drive to San Diego and back and you spend $34, you're really happy. You're really happy. Yeah. And you know, it was like really low carbon emissions because that's a thing. It's like, no, it didn't cost, you know, $108 in a Suburban. It cost $34 round trip because I could plug my vehicle in at other places. So it's very hard for me, even being a believer in the direction where it's going, to see how we can get infrastructure in place quickly enough for what I believe the time, you know, the clock is ticking and we really need to hurry things up a bit, because I do have relationships with people at the Institute of the Environment, and the forecast is not exceptionally great. But when I see companies like, when I heard about Shell Oil, and I'm sure you know way, way more about it than I do, but it was kind of like a light bulb went on, so to speak, and it was like, oh yeah, that's how it's going to happen. There's going to be a lot of big money all putting it into this because they know it's about the survival of all of us. Not yet.
And actually, it was funny because I think Shell's CEO, this was probably maybe 3-6 months ago, somewhere around that time frame, had come out and pushing electric vehicles and said, you know, my next vehicle will be electric. And this is a, you know, CEO of
an oil company.
Right?
Yeah, but they get it.
But
it is
coming. And then, and they get it and they are, you know, seeing the shift. Just one quick shameless plug, but yeah, that's where I got my all-electric car, was also from Chapman.
Yay! Oh my God, I'm going to call Neb and tell him because he'll be really happy.
Yeah, I love those guys down there, Emilio and those and the folks that down at Chapman Audi. They're really a great outfit.
And there again, it's a perfect example: pace of the leader, pace of the team. Their Chapman Cares team is substantively making a difference in this community because Ted and Shannon have that mindset. They care about the communities in which they operate and live. So there's a real support with Neb's leadership to make very, very good things happen within the company. It creates like an esprit de corps, and it's pace of the leader, pace of the team. So moving right along, your job, that of everyone at TEP, is not always easy. And I've seen it. But given the reality of our world, your customer satisfaction rate is pretty darn good, and I happen to know that. And your reputation, even when it comes to solar companies and all of the discourse and sometimes disagreement with them, there always seems to me, with some exceptions, and it's not on the part of the TEP part, I've seen some people be really disrespectful jerks, if I want to put it so eloquently, in meetings, but the overall tone is of civility and respect. So do you have advice for leaders who are going to be in those contentious situations. And you talked about building a relationship and having people, you know, I want a people person. How do you create a culture that to me goes beyond customer service? Because customer service is one thing, but having civil discourse with people that you disagree with, that's a whole nother level. That's up-leveling the conversation. So what are your words of wisdom on that? I think it matters. I think it matters a lot.
Yeah, and it's civility is a two-way street, as is incivility, right? I mean, if people are wanting a fight and they don't want to listen, then, you know, at some point you just kind of tap out and say, well, we're not going to get anywhere. But they can't make you do the same thing. They can't make you be disrespectful. They can be in the mud, but they can't force you to be in it. And that's always been, you know, our view here is, you know, we're not going to get in a mudslinging contest over issues. If we didn't think we were always doing the best thing that we could do for our customers, then we would just throw our hands up. At the end of the day, we know what we're doing, and what we're doing is in the best interest of the customers. What we want to do is have a civil conversation and inform people about why we're doing what we're doing. And at the end of the day, people will disagree, but to me, it's on us to inform them of everything that we know, and for them to likewise inform us of everything that they might know that might be different, and take all those pieces and say, can we get to a better spot than where either of us started now that we know the bigger, broader picture? It's just that sometimes it's hard to get past all the rhetoric. And past the passion, which, you know, I can't ever really, I can't fault people for being passionate about a topic. I can't fault them if they're passionate about a topic but haven't done the homework to be informed.
Right, right.
But that's on us to try to provide that. And to be honest, that's really hard to do. It's hard to get information out for the public to consume. And you know, there's this weird, this is a really recent phenomenon, at least maybe I'm just paying more attention to it now, but there's this weird distrust of any kind of public business or corporation or company that people immediately have the knee jerk of, oh, they must not be, you know, telling it like it is. This must be about, you know, money, et cetera. And if people understood our business and how they end up paying for everything that we do, that would not be a conversation. When we come out and say we're doing this in the most cost-effective manner for you, people still will push back and not believe us. But it's up to us to tell that story.
And it's not always easy to get it out there. You're so right. And it's the same thing for a business owner. It's like, yeah, do you want to know what my job looks like every day? So go ahead and criticize me, but then own your own business. I mean, it's like, unless you own your own business, you have no idea what the challenges are. And being honest with people and open and forthcoming with the information matters. And Dave, you and I know we're not going to slam anybody on this podcast ever, but that is not always the case with some of the big utility companies. It's like, this is the way it is. Oh. If you don't like it, go find your energy somewhere else, which is not even an option.
I try to encourage our people to put yourselves in their shoes.
Right.
And look at the information that they have. Would you come to any different conclusion? And chances are probably not. And then you say, okay, well, but what if that information is not necessarily right? And can we then inform these people of where these different, assumptions, et cetera, might be a little off? I mean, we have those conversations all the time.
Yeah.
We have them, you know, with environmental and renewable advocates all the time. And they're not adversarial. We're all trying to do the same thing, which is the goofy part. We just don't have all the same information. There's this asymmetry of information out there that's why this integrated resource planning stakeholder process is so good, is we get everything out there and you know, let everybody see it that we see, and then listen to them as well. And at the end of the day, you have this at least a batch of assumptions and limits, et cetera, that you can all go out to and go back to work and say, all right, we're trying to reduce greenhouse gases and we're in this box. Let's figure out how to work inside that box, and let's figure out how to expand the walls of that box as we go forward.
And the thing you said that makes so much sense to me is it's their job. It's their passion. It's their commitment to the planet. And shame on them if they're not putting pressure on TEP. I mean, seriously, it's like that's what we're all doing, is trying to move this forward. And what I like is the way the conversations happen. It's mutually respectful. And that, to me, that's everything. Yeah, and just listen.
Yeah, you're right. If you think we're not doing everything, you should tell us.
Right.
I mean, why wouldn't you? I think it's not only your responsibility, it's your right. You should say, we don't think you're doing X, Y, or Z as well as you can. And that feedback will help us look and say, well, why do you think that? And it's like, oh, they don't know this. They don't know that. If you don't give us the information, if you don't prod us on, you know, why aren't you doing this because we see that, then the conversation never happens and you just kind of in this weird standoff.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just, I mean, I see it happen here all the time. And to me, it's all good as long as there's civil discourse going on. And the other thing is, to your point, if you got to 100% renewables in, let's just say 3 years, let's just say miracle happened and you could do it, it still doesn't fix everything that needs to be looked at in terms of climate change. It doesn't. There's food insecurity. There's food security. We need to plant 1 million trees. I really believe that because I've read so much about lowering the heat island, and it would create more opportunities for stormwater to be collected and stop with the runoff. So it's part of a very complex conversation, and there isn't a silver bullet because I know people...
And it wouldn't matter if we're 100% renewables if we still have all the gas cars out there, right?
No, yeah, really. And that's what I think the conversations help bring in other, oh yeah, well, did you think of this? Well, did you think of that? So I have two more questions. And this one, I hope it cracks you up because I can't imagine. I mean, there are things that keep me up nights. There are, especially in these times. Let's just leave it at that. But there are things that are happening that I think are going to be irreversible if they're all implemented with endangered species and the EPA. Is there anything that keeps you up at night, Dave Hutchins, that you'd care to share on national podcasts?
Yeah. So there's two things that are always gnawing in the back of my mind, and these aren't going to be all that exciting to you, but it's in my sitting in my chair here, you'll see why these are, you know, kind of nerve wracking. The first is the safety of our people. We have people working in dangerous environments every second of every day. And that we have to make sure, and we do make sure, that we have the right culture of safety in our company to make sure no one gets hurt. But you can't always do absolutely everything. You can't protect your people. You can't have them work in a bubble, et cetera. And that always makes me really nervous. It is a very tough job that a lot of people have out there at TEP or at our gas company, working on high voltage line or high pressure gas lines, et cetera. So that's the one thing. Are we always doing enough to keep our people safe? The other is kind of is a little bit broader, and you know, this gets scarier by the year as well. It's just the cyber issues out there, and you know, most businesses have a worry about this in the back of their head about customer data, et cetera. And of course we have that worry, but we also have the worry about people hacking in as we get our grid more automated. You have to make sure, and we have all these critical infrastructure protection policies, et cetera, that are part of the federal government mandates, et cetera. But we have to make sure that we are always on top of that as well. Just think of how, so that, you know, go forward 10 years and we have basically a lot of our electric vehicles are electrified, and, you know, almost everything in your home is electrified, and all that stuff is now accessible or susceptible to attacks on the grid and taking out, say, energy. So we spend a lot of time and focus and energy, making sure that our cybersecurity efforts are as the best they possibly can be. But surprisingly, things like the transformation of our industry, the integration of renewables, policy changes, those things, those don't keep me up at night. Those get me excited.
Right.
Because, I probably said this 5 years ago when I became CEO of the next 5 years are going to be more change than the prior, probably 20. And that was true. And the next five are going to be, even bigger change than the prior five. There's, to me, that's excitement. That's opportunity. It's a way for us to see how our organization can have an impact in our, not just in the community and the normal things that we do in providing energy here, but how we can help, reduce greenhouse gas emissions, how we can make our community more livable, how we can make our transportation more accessible. And, that to me is exciting. So if it keeps me up at night, it's mostly I'll wake up and go, oh my God, this is so cool. We need to start looking at this. Or yeah. You come back from one of our industry meetings. It's like, oh, that is so great. I wish we would have thought about that, but I'd rather copy somebody who's already gone through that in our industry, pull it in and implement it here. Although we have some incredibly innovative things going on here at TEP, all that stuff just gets me really excited.
But that is just such a great answer. And I mean that so sincerely. When I was in Yellowstone last week, my computer got hacked. And, it's my operating system. It's so not in the magnitude of what you have to look at. And when we worked with our IT people, and we had them on the phone yesterday, like there were 30 attacks on my computer yesterday. So to think about the magnitude, scale, and scope of TEP, I'm glad it's your problem, and it would keep me up at night a lot. I mean, that is huge issue. And the human side of caring about your people does not surprise me because I know you. So you know that we could not do this podcast without me giving you a little bit of flack because you didn't tell me the big news about the U of A partnership. I'm going to say it now on national podcast. And, it was so much fun to not know and to try to get it out of people who did not tell me. They cracked up. They loved to see me suffering. But it's another, to me, a reflection of innovation and leadership and collaboration. That is one of the key words going forward with all of this. So can you just tell us a little bit about this big announcement with the University of Arizona and reducing their greenhouse gas emissions, their carbon footprint, and in a hurry? Talk about that
sure.
a little bit.
So, we entered into a great partnership with the University of Arizona to provide 100% of their Scope 2, which is energy supplied by us, energy from renewable energy. And what we did is we upsized a couple projects, solar and wind projects, the big one I mentioned, Oso Grande. And we upsized those and figured out what mix of solar and wind would follow their load as best we can with renewables, and then have enough renewable energy credits or enough kilowatt hours produced by renewable energy to match their entire energy usage there. And that to me, it was such a great partnership. It was such a great conversation with the leadership, with Dr. Robbins over there. All of their leadership was fantastic. We sat down, and this was in January of this year. We sat down for the first time, and if it wasn't for land issues of having to get a spot for a substation to improve our delivery capability to them, we probably could have got that done in like a month and a half. No kidding. We were just all on the same page. We knew what an important customer they are. We worked so well together. Now, of course, this is the next question is, well, can we do this for almost every customer in town?
There's that.
Which is and that's in essence that's kind of where our renewable or integrated resource planning process and the renewable or clean energy goals are gonna head is how much can you make our total supply emissions free or from clean energy, but everyone has to understand too that those are renewable energy credits only, and so we did this contract where it provides them that, but it still has the full cost recovery of the delivery, the distribution, the transmission, the balancing, the voltage control, the frequency response, all the things that we normally have to have are still part of their overall rate. We just, instead of where their energy is delivered from our entire portfolio, we have identified specific resources that it's delivered by. And of course, this, I have to caveat this, that this has to be approved by our Corporation Commission as well, which we've got a filing out to get that approved.
There's that.
But, yes. Yeah, there's that. But I mean, it's a great contract. I mean, when you get a deal with the customer that allows us to enter into a 20-year agreement with them, a 20-year contract with these PPAs and renewable resources, and not have any negative impact on other customers because they're still paying the full freight of the rest of the services that we provide them, it's an easy, clean, pun intended story.
And you know what's great for me? I mean, think of the parallel. So finally, we have a president of the University of Arizona that is really taking seriously climate change. And he is getting on the national and international scene. And there are professors and staff there that are very much supporting that. And I've been doing this for almost 11 years, but I've lived in this community for 44. And the timing is perfect. He is a leader. People are listening. And he's going to be doing more of things like this where we're seeing him having conversation with climate leaders in this community and around the world that put the U of A in a more powerful position, which they should be because of all the brain trust that they have at that university. So
they do.
Joaquin
Reese, who has taken on that new role, focused on that. And he sits on our board. He's been on our board for 15 plus years, and having that type of knowledge at our boardroom table has had us look at things very differently, and that's, I think, people don't appreciate how much conversation and discussion goes into the things that we do as a utility here, and how much we listen to folks out here in our community to make sure that we're steering in the same direction as they want to go.
And they are big decisions that the world is watching. So I'm sure other universities collaborate and will take note, and President Robbins will be sharing it. My friend Jim Beiser, he's one of the top climate scientists in the world. Diana Liverman, another one. When I go to international conferences like the first Climate Action Summit, you wouldn't believe the presence the U of A has in terms of presenters as being the scientist to go to on X, like Kathy Jacobs on water. I mean, the list goes on. So I want to see them be branded more as leaders in the whole climate change thing. So now I get the last word, and I love that, but you can actually say something at the end. But a few last words from me as I collect my thoughts here. As a recognized environmental educator in this community and nationally, I get some flack from time to time about partnering with a big utility company. Sometimes it's a little more than flack, and some pretty unkind words have come my way. I never hesitate to stand my ground. I never try to justify this partnership. And it's all because of the people that I know personally at TEP. It's because I admire and respect Dave Hutchins as their leader, and because I want to be a trusted and respected resource for them. What it doesn't mean is that we always agree. We don't. But there is always mutual respect. And I have so much respect for what TEP does in this community on many levels. I have said to Dave Hutchins many times, I'm so glad I don't have your job, because he has many masters to answer to, and I would not be willing to walk in his shoes. Up to including right now, I admire Dave, I respect him, and will continue to be a voice for renewables and getting away from fossil fuel every chance I get, and he knows that. And that's what I call a respectful partnership. Dave Hutchins, thanks for being here and for your leadership in the place that I call home. And thank you and all the people at TEP for your support of our mission and vision. We appreciate it, and we can do more because you're one of our partners. So that's from the bottom of my very green heart, Dave Hutchins. Do you have any response to that?
Thank you, Gina. Here's what you have to tell people is, if it wasn't for partnerships like this, if it wasn't for you in my ear all the time on topics like this, would we be doing necessarily the things that we're doing? If it wasn't for Joaquin sitting on our board, if it wasn't for other people in our community sitting on our board, if it wasn't for what we're doing and in casting a wide net and getting opinions on what we're doing from the integrated resource plan, we wouldn't all be pulling in the same direction. If you only hang around people that think like you, you're probably not going to have any, you're not going to have any sort of pragmatic effect.
Right.
If you get with people with different opinions, bring in all the facts from all the different sides, that's when we make progress. That's when we figure out how we can get to the place where all of us, you know, can see that we're on the same trajectory. That to me is the bigger issue, and that's why I really like having partnerships like this, partnerships with the University of Arizona. All of those things make us all better and get us all to have a more complete set of facts to work from.
I agree. And everybody that's listening, the thousands of you that show up every day to support our mission and vision, is it any wonder why we picked Dave to be the first one to have a conversation about leadership? And again, I say that sincerely. Nobody can ever make me say anything. And Dave Hutchins, you know that.
Yes.
So thanks for being here. I know your time is busy, and you know that I always love the time that we get to spend together. So thanks for doing what you're doing, and keep it up. Keep it up. I love what I'm seeing.
Thank you, Gina.
Thanks, everybody.